Welcome to West Wing Report, direct from the White House press room.
Time once again for a look at the crystal ball. That means, of course, our friend Kyle Condick. He's with the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, what's happening?
Now, the subject this week, the governor's red alert, part two. It sounds like the commies are attacking or something.
Yeah, that's right.
But last week we talked about the Senate races that are competitive. This week we're talking about the governors. And once again, you're using that terrific terror alert color coding kind of thing. Two red alerts. One Democratic seat looks to be in trouble, but three Republican seats look to be in trouble. What are they?
So the one Democratic seat is Arkansas, and one may be surprised to know that Arkansas has a Democratic governor, Mike Beebe, who's term limited. He actually won by 30 points in 2010. So whatever bad things were happening to Democrats that year did not affect Beebe. But it looks like the Democrats had a candidate there, the state attorney general, and he had a sex scandal. And so it's kind of unclear who the Democratic candidate's going to be. The Republicans are rallying around a former U.S. House rep, Asa Hutchinson. And so, you know, it looks like the Republicans are probably going to, you know, take over that seat, barring. But there's some possible candidates who might make a competitor for the Democrats. But that looks like the surest governor's race of them all to flip from one party to the other. On the Republican side, Virginia, alone among the states, only allows governors to serve for a single four-year term. And so Bob McDonnell, who probably would have no trouble getting reelected, can't run. The Republican candidate is probably Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who is a favorite of the Tea Party and the right, but maybe too conservative for the state. The Democratic candidate is Terry McAuliffe, who is best known as sort of Bill Clinton's fundraiser and a former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Neither of these guys are seen as particularly electable, and there's a possibility that the state's lieutenant governor, Bill Bowling, a Republican, may step in and there'd be a three-way race. And then Florida is another state. Governor Rick Scott, Republican, is very unpopular. It's also possible that Charlie Crist, the former Republican governor of Florida, will turn around and run as a Democrat against Scott in 2014. Hmm. So, you know, those are some of the states that are really, you know, really worth watching.
And you mentioned Maine also. That's one of the red alert states.
Oh, yeah, in Maine, Paul LePage was kind of a conservative Tea Party Republican who got elected in a three-way race in 2010. Maine typically has three-way races. They have no trouble electing independents. One of their senators right now is an independent, Angus King, who caucuses with the Democrats. And so the Democrats they're trying to figure out how to beat LePage, but it's possible that if there's another three-way race, there's a candidate named Elliot Cutler who is a former Ed Muskie staffer, but he is an independent. There's some thought that he and whoever the Democratic candidate will split the vote like what happened in 2010, and LePage will get reelected. But so he's unpopular, LePage, but it sounds like it's possible that that he might get reelected anyway if there's another three-way race. So there's some kind of unusual dynamics in some of these states.
All right, now I say orange alert states, and there's too many to go into here, but the orange alert states on the Democratic side, like Connecticut, Hawaii, Massachusetts, where Deval Patrick, of course, is rising in national prominence. On the Republican side, orange alert states, meaning these are kind of governors that are in somewhat trouble, but not the dire trouble. Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina. So Nikki Haley, and let's talk about Nikki Haley and John Kasich are in trouble, you think?
I think that they're probably in about equal amounts of trouble, meaning that they're in good shape to get reelected, but there are some warning signs. You know, South Carolina is really Republican, but Haley's had kind of a rough tenure as governor. There are some people on the right who are kind of unhappy with her, and the candidate who ran against her in 2010, State Senator Vincent Shaheen, he is thinking of running again. He actually came within 4 points of Haley in 2010. Of course, even that great Republican year. So that's one to watch. And also, you know, I would sort of lump Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania all in together. Rick Snyder in Michigan, John Kasich in Ohio, Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania. Corbett is probably the most vulnerable of those three. Pennsylvania has this long tradition of sort of going 8 years with one party and 8 years with the net with the other. And so Corbett is, theoretically, if tradition holds, shouldn't have any trouble winning a second term as a Republican because he succeeded Ed Rendell, who was a two-term Democrat. But Corbett's numbers are just really, really bad. And there's some thought that the Democrats will have a good candidate, the state treasurer or a member of the Allison Schwartz, who's a U.S. House representative. So of those, I'd say Corbett's probably in the worst shape. Kasich and Snyder, there's been some blowback over right to work in Michigan for Snyder, and Kasich sort of had a rough 2011. But interestingly, both of them have opted into the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid extension, which has sort of outraged some people in their own parties. But they're both in pretty decent shape. One problem is that as of yet, neither in Michigan nor Ohio have the Democrats really have a top-tier candidate at the moment.
And the yellow alert states, which meaning that the governors there have some issues, but not particularly serious. And I'll only ask you about one, and that's Maryland, simply because the governor there, Martin O'Malley, has his eye on the White House. Tell me about Martin O'Malley.
O'Malley is term limited. He would like the governorship to pass to Anthony Brown, his lieutenant governor. But there are other Democrats who are going to try to run for that seat. I guess it would be, O'Malley's, I think, almost certainly going to at least try to run for president. Whether he'll be successful or not is a totally different story. I don't see him as a top tier person, but I would say the Democratic field is kind of a big mystery at this point, as we sort of wait for Hillary Clinton to make her decision, which won't come for years, probably officially. But Maryland is a Democratic state, but in the right situation, they could elect a Republican governor.
Okay. Now, the big picture here is that Republicans hold, I think, 3 out of 5 governorships.
That's 30, right.
30 out of 50 Democrats, 19 to 19. There's one independent. You also say that, and elaborate on this, the politics of state houses are not as clear-cut as the politics of Congress. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mentioned the Medicaid expansion. I mean, we think of Congress as being this very entrenched partisan situation, and I think it is. But in the states, the governors, there's a lot less posturing going on. The governors have to, govern, and they have to, put forth proposals for their states. And, the way that the Medicaid expansion is written, essentially the federal government pays for almost all of it. And so a lot of these states governed by people who you'd think of as pretty conservative Republicans, and John Kasich in Ohio is one, and Jan Brewer in Arizona is another, and Rick Scott in Florida, they've all decided to opt into the Medicaid expansion. And again, this has gotten a lot of sort of Tea Party people upset. But, when the federal government is offering money, I think the thought among these governors is that you should take it, particularly because it can pays essentially for health care for very poor people. There in a lot of these states, there are broad coalitions of, essentially hospital lobbyists and charitable organizations, all of whom have been pressuring their governors to accept the Medicaid expansion for I think reasons of their own bottom line, but also for, humanitarian reasons, essentially. A lot of them have, and it's probably the practical decision to make if you're governor of any state, really, given that the federal government is offering the money.
Now, just a quick sidebar here. If you have some of these governors, Rick Scott, his decision yesterday, I think, to turn away from Tea Party principles, accept this money, as you elaborated, what does that say about the Tea Party itself? Have they peaked, or are they losing strength? How do you read it?
Well, I mean, I think we have to see what happens to these governors if there's actually, if the opponents of the Medicaid expansion can actually do damage to the governors. And you know, here's another point, is that the governors can't opt into this unilaterally. The state legislatures, all of which are controlled by Republicans in the states that I've mentioned, Michigan, Ohio, Arizona, Florida, they're going to have to go along with it in their governor's budget. And so a lot of these legislators are going to be put in a tough spot to sort of go against principles or go against their own governor. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know if these legislators are going to want to embarrass the governor of their own party. And some of them might get primary challenges. I mean, that's the threat. I know it's been threatened in Ohio, but how credible those threats are in state legislative races, I don't know.
Interesting. Okay, we'll leave it there. Kyle Kondik, UVA Center for Politics, great stuff as always, and we'll check in next week.
Okay, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.